Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today, we welcome Sharon Grossman into the Cigar Lounge. Sharon, how are you today?
Woo-hoo! I'm excited to be here. Yes.
Sharon, you know, if you've listened to any of these, we know I always start with the same question, which is, tell me a little bit about what you do.
That is a very interesting question at this point in time. And you probably appreciate that more than most people listening to this, because you were with me in Key West at the Mastermind when we were talking about all the new things I'm going to be doing. So I'm kind of in this transition stage. So the short of it is, I have a background in psychology. I started doing more executive coaching and really specializing in burnout, and now I'm transitioning to focus more on performance. So as I say, I like to take teams from overwhelmed to optimal.
Awesome. And if they're performing, they're not going to burn out either.
And if they're burning, they're not going to perform. So it works both ways.
Yes, it does. So tell me something. How did you get involved in the speaker world?
Yeah, I've been doing speaking kind of on and off for a long time. I think about 25 or so years ago, I joined Toastmasters for the first time. I'd done it in a few different cities kind of as I moved around, but never really professionally. And then towards the time, like around 2015, I went into private practice doing therapy. And then as soon as I got into that, I said to myself, I got to find a way out of this, because this is like a sausage factory. You know, it was like the only way to make more money is to make more sausages. So I started just doing some coaching on the side. And then eventually said, I want to specialize in something. And then I landed on burnout and I wrote a book about it. And then I started doing more speaking to healthcare organizations. And this is pre-COVID.
Okay.
And then COVID happened. And then the therapy thing completely went away. We moved to Florida and it was like a great opportunity to completely revamp. And then I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to speak more. I want to get out there. I want to, you know, have more impact on greater audiences. And from there, hopefully develop some other ways of working with people on a deeper level. And that's where things like the coaching and consulting and training can come in.
So getting off the stage and getting down and dirty to make people's lives change.
Yeah. Exactly.
In your journey, who would you say were the biggest supporters or mentors or role models? Who was it that kept you going and got you to where you are now?
Well, I would say that professionally, I didn't have a lot of support until probably this year.
Okay.
So this year I feel so incredibly supported. So I'm very grateful for that. But it's been a lot of years up until this point, and I feel like I've just been clawing my way and trying to figure things out on my own. But the biggest support I think I've had all throughout the years was my dad.
Okay.
And this goes way back to when I started undergrad and I declared that my major was going to be psychology. And he said to me, I just want you to know that if you decide that this isn't for you, it's okay for you to start over. So essentially, he was giving me permission to fail. And then once I actually got into business, he was just always there supporting me, asking me questions, taking an interest, helping me financially when I needed it. Just like somebody that I felt, you know, something about my dad that's really interesting is he's kind of ADHD, although undiagnosed. And he doesn't have the capacity for details. Like, he's like, get to the point, you know? He's just like, give me the big picture. But he's always interested. So, you know, I've kind of learned to, and I've become somebody who can kind of either do details or big picture, but I'm kind of like him in that sense, where even though I'm not ADHD, like I don't like people wasting time. So I'm like very direct and to the point.
See, I come to the defense of dads everywhere. You said he gave you permission to fail. I think he gave you permission to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
In reality, that's what he did. And
that's
I think
true.
as a dad, I mean, that's what everybody wants. You want your children to be happy. And I think that that's great because it basically says, hey, you know, do this, put your work in, but don't be ashamed of yourself if you're not happy doing it. Because I know a lot of people that are unhappy in what they have chosen to do. You also said, now, one of the things you said a moment ago was you were clawing your way through on your own. What resources did you use to keep going since you didn't have anybody there until recently?
I think it was just the desire to succeed, the desire to figure it out. It's almost like I said, I knew what I wanted. I wanted to leave my therapy practice behind and establish more of a coaching practice, and doing the training and the speaking and the consulting all kind of came down the road. But I had that vision of like just doing that. And I knew that it was going to be a lot harder. It wasn't like anybody is going to feed me the leads or tell me how to find these people or anything. Like I just had to figure it out. And I guess I'm okay to figure things out. It's just, obviously it takes a lot longer. And then what I would do is I would look for people to coach me, and I invested on all kinds of coaches, and I would say the majority of them were not helpful.
Okay.
So from that perspective, it was kind of a lot of waste of resources and time. But, you know, I would get a little bit here and a little bit there and eventually figured it out.
Well, and if you've listened to any of these or heard from some of the members, you're not alone. A lot of people have spent a lot of money on coaches and resources that have led to nowhere. In your world, now I'm going to ask this because, okay, you're a therapist who now is becoming a coach. What do you see as the main difference between coaching someone and providing them therapy?
Yeah, I would say they're different in a number of different ways. So therapy typically is about somebody's having a problem, and you know, the way that the people that I would see typically, it would be depression, anxiety, trauma.
Okay.
So there's something going on. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to the doctor, something's hurting you and you want the pain to stop, which is one model, right? This is the therapy model. I feel like with coaching, it's like, I want to be more successful. I want to grow my business. I want to whatever, you know, there's something where it's not necessarily that I have pain. I mean, we could argue that there's pain that I'm not more successful, but it's different. It's not survival pain. It's more like my dream pain, I guess. I want my dream to come true. You know, that sort of pain. So there's that. And there's also the other main difference is, at least in the textbooks, they'll tell you, therapy is about the past and coaching is about the future.
There you go.
However,
that's the answer.
however, I was always a therapist that helped people focus on the future, and I'm a coach that helps people look into the past. So I kind of am a blend.
No, and that's it. When I asked the question, it's because I guess in my head, I'm sitting here going, you're a therapist, I'm going to ask you. But in my head, the only thing I'm thinking is therapy is when you're dealing with problems people are having in their head, and coaching is when you're dealing with problems people are having in the real world and navigating the future rather than their thoughts. But
that's not 100% true. How
no,
many
I
people...
realize that. That's I'm telling you, that's why I asked. It didn't. Yeah.
How many people in the workforce are having trouble because they're not managing their stress, because they're beating themselves up, because they're perfectionistic, because they have imposter syndrome? There's so many things that get in the way of performance because of these cognitive constraints. And that's really what I like to come in and help people do.
And is it safe to say that that is what makes you get up in the morning?
I don't think it's one thing. What does? I think it's just passion for life. I don't think like if I never had to work another day.
Okay.
I would still get up in the morning. I'm grateful for the little things. So when I wake up in the morning, and now that we live in Miami Beach, I get to look out the window and see water, and it's absolutely stunning. And then I, you know, sitting for dinner, can see the sun setting from my window and things like that. It's just like the little things I'm so grateful for and so aware of every single day, that to me is worth getting out of bed for. And that's awesome. I try, like, my biggest thing outside of my business is my family. And I'm raising two small children. I should say they're kind of small-ish. They're getting bigger. Almost 11 and 13. But, you know, one of the things that takes up a lot of my resources is being a mom. And so it's making sure that we're eating dinner together at night and preparing healthy meals for them and taking them to and from school and doing the shopping or whatever needs to be done. So it's really about juggling a lot of things, but it gives me a sense of purpose, right? Like I care about these humans that I've brought into the world, and I want them to grow up being healthy, being informed, being empathic beings that are connected to others and are happy, as you mentioned.
Beautiful. In this speaking world and coaching world that you're in, what do you think was the biggest mistake or failure you've ever had?
In speaking?
Yeah.
I think when I was really, really early in the game, I wasn't experienced enough. So I was just kind of winging it. And it was, I always prepared, but I don't think I did enough audience interaction.
Okay.
I think that was a mistake. I think people like to feel involved, and also in terms of helping them. I mean, and you know this more than anybody because you really engage with them. But, you know, for me, it's always been like, well, I want to give them this information. And now it's about how do I do it in an engaging way that's memorable so that it's not just entertainment, but they actually go back to work and can start implementing these things so that their work life is easier and they're less stressed out, et cetera. Bravo. So it's kind of navigating those two things.
Nice. Bravo. Let me ask you this, because I'm pondering. I'm still stuck on your father's advice, because that's like, in other words, you go to do all this work and then change your mind. So let's say that right now, sitting here today, I want you to take everything that you know about you and about your career at this moment. And if all those years ago when you started in psychology, your father said to you, if you don't like it, start over. What would you have said to him if you knew everything you know right now? Or what would you have done differently at that point?
Well, I think what I didn't say to him, but what would still be true, is thank you for giving me that permission, because I know so many people who felt pressured by their parents to do something. And it wasn't even something that they chose to do for themselves, but something that their parents wanted them to do. And he wasn't pushing his agenda on me at all. So that was really nice to hear. What would I have done differently without regards to my dad? So what happened with me was I never intended to go all the way with psychology. Like, for me, it was like, I was just going to get a master's degree and go into practice. Back then, especially on the East Coast, there really wasn't much of a track for master level practitioners. Today, it's like totally different. And on the West Coast, it was totally different. But what happened was I finished my master's degree, and I felt like I didn't learn anything. And I was like, I can't take that responsibility onto myself, like sitting with somebody and like telling them what to do and helping them with their lives. Like, I don't feel prepared at all. And the reason for that was, I think, because my program, these programs are so, especially the doctoral program, they're so focused on creating researchers. So we spend half the time learning statistics and how to do research and analysis and all this stuff, which is completely not helpful if you're going a clinical track, you know? So for me, I finished the master's and I was like, I have to keep going just so that I know, just so I feel competent. And then I went 5 more years, if you can believe that, to do the doctorate. And I came out feeling a little better, but not much. And really, I learned more than anything just by doing. So it was really like the practice of it is where I learned, and then doing research on my own in terms of like, I am dealing with somebody who's having these issues. I don't want to just be this passive. That was the other thing. Like, I never wanted to be, so many therapists, I think, are like, okay, well, you know, I'll see you next week kind of a thing. And then it just goes on forever. And the patients are like, oh, okay, well, great. So I'll see my therapist again next week. And they do this for years, right? And it's like 8 years later, they're still seeing each other. And I was like, that's not happening. So for me, it was about, how do I get you whatever you need and get you out the door so that you can do your thing? And then I can help somebody else, as opposed to keeping you forever. And then like, that's it. So I wanted to cut the cord. And in order to do that, I needed them to be active in the process. And I needed to give them homework and have them actually do it. And what would happen in the therapy, and part of the reason I wanted to leave, is because a lot of these patients don't have buy-in, right? They don't have skin in the game because their insurance is paying the bill. So they'll come in and I'll be like, so do you remember what we talked about last week? And they said, no. And I'm like, well, if you don't remember what we're talking about between weeks, then you're not gonna, I mean, like the transformation doesn't happen in here. It happens in between sessions, right? When you're going out into the world and you're actually putting what we're talking about into practice. And if you can't even remember what we're talking about, then that's a problem. Or they wouldn't do their homework or whatever. And I was just like, well, this is really just a waste of my time.
Do you find a similar problem when you're speaking to an audience or you're coaching someone, that they do the same thing where they're looking for you to provide them a silver bullet, and when you don't give it to them, they come back next for the next one?
Well, with the speaking, you don't really have that because you don't have a long relationship with the audience. And it's really like, you maybe have them for an hour or whatever. There isn't this continuity, so you can't really see that in action. With coaching, I don't usually have that because I have a very structured program that I put people through. And so they know what they're getting before they come in, and people can kind of self-select. They know, you know, this isn't really for me, or, you know, this is, I'm looking for something less structured or more whatever. I don't know. I think people that come to work with me, they pretty much know. And if they don't get it right off, I will tell them. So as an example, I'm working with somebody right now, and the way that I have my coaching program structured is you get a video every week, and then you're supposed to watch it and then come to the coaching call. And then we talk about how to bring whatever you just learned into what's going on in your life. And this new client, so he shows up to the first session. Oh, I didn't watch the video. And I said to him, so for future reference, if we have a session and you haven't watched the video, we need to postpone our session because, you know, it's like we have 12 sessions together.
Right.
And you can't get behind schedule because then you're going to have multiple videos. And the idea is you want to space this stuff out because you're learning new mindsets and new skills and things. And I need you to like actually go out into the world and try these things out and then collect data and come back and tell me, I tried this, this worked, or I tried this and it didn't work. And then we can go from there. But if you're not doing the work and then you're coming to the session, I mean, we can still coach, but it's not going to be on the program. So, you know, I mean, there's still value in it, but I don't want them to get lost. And I also want to set the boundaries and the expectations ahead of time.
Perfect. In all that you've done and gotten where you are today, is there something that you went in the last couple of years, the last year or last whatever, where all of a sudden you said, wow, I wish I knew that when I started, or I wish I knew that 5 years ago? Something that suddenly changed your perspective, something you learned that went, oh my God, I wish I knew that.
Well, it's interesting because I kind of had that moment in Key West
Okay.
when it wasn't even coming from me, it was coming from one of the other speakers. And I think we all share this idea of, getting speeches is great, but it's a one-off. And you hope to get some other work from that, some spin-off gigs from that, but that's not a guarantee. So people are getting tired of just going to the one-off and then having to fetch find their next speech. The idea of going from that to consulting, where you have a much longer engagement with the client, is something that I didn't even think about until I got to that room. And then I was like, I wish I thought about this, from the very beginning. I would have completely structured my entire business differently, and I would have been so much further ahead at this point. But yeah, I mean, I don't have any regrets or anything, but I'm just saying,
No.
if I had, this knowledge earlier, I think it would have definitely served me.
Now that's awesome. That's kind of what I want to know. We all learn things as we move on, and
Yeah.
then all of a sudden you say, God, I wish I knew that. And I always like to know what those gotcha moments are. If I want to ask you this, in your personality, your mind, is there one tool in your toolbox that you think has gotten you this far and gotten you to where you want to be that you love having in your toolbox?
I think for me, I'm really good at analysis. So
Okay.
when I am talking to somebody and they think their problem is X, I can usually see beyond what they're seeing because, we all have blind spots. And so I could, and a lot of times it's either that they're not aware of it, or I don't know, they're not being real. People don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to tell
Right.
you everything. Or maybe it's just so layered and complex because there's so many things going on, especially in the workplace. I have a lot of CEOs that I work with, and they often feel like the way that they're doing things is the only way. Otherwise, they would have done it differently by now. And what they don't realize is so much of their pain comes from within. So they're focused on the employees, they're focused on the organization, they're focused on all these constraints that feel out of their control. And what I see when I talk to them is like, okay, you're a perfectionist, you have no boundaries, you haven't taken a vacation in 15 years. Like, there's things that you can do here that would completely improve your situation. Let's talk about that first,
What is it right now? I mean, on your, I don't know what you use, whiteboard, notebook, vision board. What one thing is there that wasn't there 30 days ago? Something new that you came up with in the last 30 days where you said, I have to start doing this.
So, because I am transitioning from talking about burnout to talking about performance, I'm in the process right now of taking some of the information that I wrote about in my book on burnout and taking some other things that I've researched or I think would be pertinent to performance and putting together my new framework so that when I go forward as a thought leader, I can say, this is my unique framework. This is what I do. I come into organizations, and this is how I help them with performance. I bring these different
Okay.
components in together. So I'm in the process of kind of piecing it all together right now.
Nice. If you had access to 10 times your current business budget, what would you do with the money?
Oh man, I don't know. I guess I would somehow spend it on marketing so that I get more leads. I don't know. Or maybe hire a person to do sales for me or something. I don't know.
Okay. No,
You
just
know,
curious. Well, all right,
potentially.
let's go to another. What if you suddenly found yourself so rich that you didn't have to do anything ever again? Is there another career or something else you would do with your life?
Well, I don't know about career because I think this is it for me.
Okay.
But and mind you, I mean, this is a great career because I look at all the things I get to do. I mean, this is amazing, right? So no complaints. But what I've been talking to my husband about is when our kids are out of the house and we get to retire officially, I just want to be a nomad. I just want to travel the world and take it really slow and just go deep into little towns and cities in Europe and things like that. And because you can work remotely, if I'm still working at that point, I can do it from wherever. So that's something I'm very excited about.
That's awesome. Love it.
Thank you.
I guess I want to ask you this. Do you believe that you are successful?
You know, I think it really depends on your definition of success. And I feel like I have little successes. I think that it's always a work in progress. And, you know, I am far from where I ultimately want to be, but I am definitely working it every single day. And I'm so grateful to have, now that I'm in the speaker world, I feel so much more supported and understood. And I'm so grateful because I've met so many of you guys. So this has been a game changer for me.
For the people in Cigar Peg, if someone is trying to get a hold of you to reach out to you, what is the best way for them to reach Sharon Grossman?
Probably email. So it's Sharon at drsharongrossman.com.
Okay. And my last question for you, and is there something that I didn't ask you where you went, oh my God, thank God he didn't ask me that?
I'm pretty much an open book, so
Okay.
there isn't anything that I'm like nervous about you asking.
Okay.
So no,
I
not
just like to
really.
watch people's faces when I ask that question and hear them giggle.
No,
And
what we didn't talk about, which I would love to one day do with you, is talk about mentalism, because that's something that you do that I'm absolutely fascinated by.
well,
So
we can do that on something else, but not on the Cigar Peg podcast. Yeah, so as we wrap up today, is there anything that you'd like to share with the members of Cigar Peg before we close out today?
I want to share that I haven't met all of you, but the ones that I have met have been phenomenal. And I feel like I'm the newbie in the family, and I am so grateful to be part of your family. So thank you for having me.
Well, love having you in Cigar Peg, and I loved having you in the Cigar Lounge today. So thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Joe.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.